So I want to say it has been truly an honor. I remember the day Bobby came to me and she said, I'm thinking about like being the chairperson of this committee. And I stood behind her 100%. She said, but what are you going to do? And I said I would do programming, because what I love about my recovery is that I can go to anywhere and find a meeting and meet people and say me too. And so I believe I was up in Butler this last, 6 months or so ago. And I heard this gentleman speak before, and one other thing I like to do when I'm listening to speakers is kind of just like look around the room and see how it's affecting other people. And anyway, I heard him speak up in Butler at one of their speaker jams they had up there. And I respect his recovery. I see the love that he shares with other people. And with that, I give you Dale R. from Bigger on the Inside from Shadyside.
I'm an addict named Dale. And I want to thank God, first and foremost, because I believe if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here, and I don't think any one of us would be here. I want to thank this area, the Laurel Mountains Highland area of Narcotics Anonymous area. I want to thank Sandy for calling me and asking me would I come and share for this year's Unity Retreat. And I was honored, because nobody ever called me to do nothing. And so I'm grateful. They said a grateful addict won't use. Now, I know a whole lot of people that I thought was grateful, and they used. So, but our literature says this. It says that the most obvious thing for an addict to do is to use drugs. I didn't see grateful nowhere around that, but I kind of understand what they're saying, because if you're grateful, you got a whole different meaning to go with that. And so there's a whole lot of slogans that in the early days that really hit me and allowed me to stay here. Now there's a different meaning on a lot of these slogans. They're still good. They're still good. Don't get me wrong. One of them was, they said a lot was, some of us got to die in order for some of us to live. Now, I don't know about you, but now I see that on a deeper level. Like, I ain't dying for none of y'all that's in this room. You hear what I'm saying? That has the opportunity, that has, our literature says that it's available to us all. Once you hear the message, see, I don't want to be the addict who finds the life-saving message and then die. I don't want to be that addict. Now, when I first got here 22 years ago, you know, it was a long walk from right there to get my 24-hour key tag. Now, I didn't think I was an addict when I got here, because it was something about being an addict, that stigma that's tied to that thing. I thought maybe I got one more shot not to be one. Cause like where I came from, like we don't give up, like, you know, like willingly. You know, the literature says something about we got to, when we became willing, we became beaten when we became willing. And so I didn't know any of that. I didn't know any of that, like, you know, this journey that we're on before we get here. Because there's two journeys. There's the journey of active addiction, and then there's the journey of recovery. And so, like, I remember, like, you know, growing up in this little small town where I'm from a little small town called Sharon, Pennsylvania, you know, and I always say it's a small town where they do big things. Right? Because, like, imagine the worst street. Imagine the worst street in any city. And everybody can probably come up with the worst street or several streets. And they're everywhere. You know, I moved to Pittsburgh 21 years ago. I live an hour and 20 minutes away from Pittsburgh. And my addiction got me in Pittsburgh. And I never used in Pittsburgh, but I used in a lot of places. I was in the military for 17 years. And I just celebrated 22 years clean on August the 6th. And then I got clean a week before my birthday because I couldn't take it no more. You know, you never know the day you get clean. You know, I guess you'd be like at the end of the road. Like, it was 95 degrees outside. I'll never forget this day. I was trying to hold on until my birthday. I knew I was done. You know how they say, stick a fork in you? Right? I was crispy. Right? Like, when you overcook the meat? That was me. And so I'm out there and I'm just going through the motions. Like, the dope wasn't even working no more. By the time I got here, I didn't know what else to do. And I remember, like, being in one of them trap houses, you know. And I asked one of my friends, I said, "Don't you want to do something different?" And he looked at me, and I had the pipe, you know what I mean? And he said, "Man, pass the dope." I ain't trying to hear that, man. Because even now that I've been clean, I realized that he didn't even have a solution. You hear what I mean? Like, there was no solution. Nobody was talking about getting clean when I got clean. Not from where I'm from. There was very few meetings there, but I've come to find out that there was meetings going on. I just didn't know. Yeah, I was kind of mad about that shit, too. Because the people who I knew that was going to meetings, they never told me. Like, and they said, you know, I seen them at my first convention in Seven Springs in 1996. And I said, "Well, why come y'all didn't tell me?" And you know what they said? "We was trying to tell you, dumbass. You was coming in and out of them abandoned buildings." You know what I mean? Because at the end of the road, I had nowhere to live. Every place that was vacant, I said, "That's mine. I'm gonna be in there tonight. And, you know, and I would end up in some abandoned place because I had got so ashamed, and I had gotten to the point where I started living on the animalistic level. Like, it was okay to sleep outside. And it was okay to spend up all the money. Right? It was okay, like, not go home for 3 days. Like, I would come home and my wife would say, because I would just come in the crib like it was okay. And she would look at me like, because, you know, she stopped talking. And one day I came home and the key did not work no more. That's kind of like how it happened. Like, it was real quick for me. Like, I was that addict, like, I was that addict who just kind of just smoked weed for, like, years and years and years, and then one day somebody said, try this. And I said, yeah, all right, I'll try it. And I tried it, and it was the worst try ever. Ever. You know, it was crack cocaine. Like, at that time, they called it Freebase. So it wasn't Ready Rock. I don't want to take somebody all the way there and make you, you know what I mean? But it was that, it was, you know, we had to do it ourselves, and it didn't do nothing for me the first time around. Because I was still in the military, and I was home on leave, and all I was thinking about was getting back to my next duty station. And that was in 1983. I was 23 years old. I was young. I was slam dunking a basketball. You know, I had these dreams and aspirations that I was going to be this NBA basketball player. I really did. I used to go to sleep with two basketballs in my hand. And my mom used to have to take the basketballs out my hand. You know what I mean? While I was asleep. And lo and behold, I didn't make it to the NBA because drugs destroyed that. Even if I had a slight chance, drugs took all that away. And so I became a drug addict. I was the guy who, you know, that was supposed to do all of these things. I came from a good home. My mother wasn't an addict. My dad wasn't an addict. But somehow I was affected with this disease. And I wanted to find out. For many years I was here, because when I got here, you need to know, when I got here, I started my recovery in Butler, Pennsylvania. Yes, it was a very good place to start my recovery, because at that time, recovery was off the chain. And so I remember going to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because I kind of slithered up in here. I didn't want to be here, you know what I mean? I liked y'all for as far as I could see y'all, you know what I mean? I had lost everything. I was sad. I was depressed. I didn't have no money. My clothes looked like, you know what I'm saying? I was unhuggable. I was unlovable when I got here. And I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting on a Tuesday night called Karina Group of Narcotics Anonymous. And them people knew what was wrong with me. And I was like, how you know? They said, man, sit down. Get you a cup of coffee over there. Go get you some hot coffee. Come back, sit down, get you a seat, and learn how to listen and listen to learn. That's what they told me. I was kind of pissed about that, you know what I mean? Because a couple of them said it a little strange, you know what I mean? But it probably was just me, because I was just fresh off the street, you know what I mean? I hadn't slept in, you know, I forgot how long I really had a good night's rest. I was in that area of recovery. I hadn't had a good night's rest. And so I called the VA, and the VA, I remember before I got there, I called the Veterans Administration, and I told them that I need help. Because I came back from the Gulf War. I went to the Gulf War, and I got wounded. And it took me 6 years to recover from my injuries. My unit got hit by an Iraqi Scud missile the day before the war ended. And it killed 33 people, and it wounded 250-something people. And I was one of the 250-something people that was wounded, and I was the least wounded out of the 250-something people. And it took me 6 years to recover just to be able to... I came home on a walker. I remember they sent me to Ludwigshafen in Germany, where there was supposed to be 10,000 soldiers was supposed to be wounded. And they sent me over there to Ludwigshafen, and I went in this room, and they had me in this room where they had these beds with these IVs hooked to these beds. And it was 10,000 in the room, and it wasn't many soldiers at that time when I got there. But it was, you know, you know, the worst part of the war is where I was in Saudi Arabia. So I came home about a month and a half later. I ended up in Walter Reed Hospital in Maryland, and that's where my disease took off. See, I didn't know that I was even an addict. I didn't know that this disease is patient. I didn't know that this disease can affect young people, old people, women, men, gay, rich people, poor people, nice car, no car, money in your pocket, no money. I didn't know that this disease can affect anybody. And, because I said, you know, I was one of them addicts that it'll never happen to me. I remember coming back from the war, and I had saved all this money, and my wife, I told her, you know, take care of the money and all these different things, and I didn't do nothing for a whole year. From 1991, I came back. Early in March of 1991, I went over in 1990. I went over to the Gulf War. It was Desert Shield when I went over. It was Desert Shield for 8 months, and then it was Desert Storm for 1 month. And so we was over there for like 8 months. We were preparing for war, and we were digging in and all these different things, and one day they declared war. Like, I didn't even know it was going to happen, but it happened. Like, one day out the clear blue sky. It's kind of like how this disease hits you. Like, you just be like having fun, you know what I mean? You know, like I always share this. Like, a lot of y'all remember when we first started getting high, it was fun in the beginning, you know, when everybody had something on it. You know, I always say when you know, in my area, you know, I always say when everybody had five on it, right? But at the end of the road, I didn't want your something on it. You know why, right? Because that meant I had to share. And the literature states that the core of our disease is total self-centeredness, not self-centeredness. That self-centeredness is just a little bit. But total self-centeredness? You mean to tell me I was total self-centeredness? Yeah, you was total self-centeredness. You would take the family car and drive it all over the city. That was total self-centeredness. I'm talking about, I had people in the car that I would never be with. I'm talking about never be with. Ever. And the disease took me to a place where it was okay to have the worst people in my car. I'm talking about people, when they seen them, they would go, "There they go." I had them kind of people in my car, and people would say, "What are you doing with those people in your car?" I said, "They're just people. They're my get high buddies." And so I remember like getting here. And like, I remember when my disease took off, I said I was just going to go up to the bar and have a drink. Now, the VA had gave me Darvocets. Now, I never was a pill guy. But the VA gave me Darvocets, Percocets, and some other kind of sets. Vicodins, right? So I told a friend about them, and he said, "Man, you can make a lot of money off of them." I said, "Well, I got this pain, and I think I need to take them like they're prescribed." So I was doing real good. I was doing real good. And I looked at the bottle, and the bottle said, "Take, you know, one every 4 hours, you know." And so I started taking them. I did real good, and then one day I said, "You know what? I like how they make me feel." And then somebody said, "Well, if you take one and then you drink a beer like real fast behind it, and then two shots, you'll really feel good. And I said, like any addict, for real? And they was right. And I did it for a while. And then some other things started happening. Like the disease is real sneaky. Like it's real conniving. You know what I mean? And the disease is an assassin. Right? And it's real. You ever see that the guy in the graveyard, like with that thing? The Grim Reaper? That's how this disease is. It's just waiting on us to come to the cemetery. Right? So I'm out there late night. I'm 2 years in now. I'm 2 years in. I'm talking about, like, it ain't no weed no more. It ain't no beer, a couple beers and go home no more. It's not none of that. It's not like I gotta go home and get ready for work. I was calling my job and I was saying stuff like this. I don't think I'm gonna come in today. I started doing stuff like this. You know, I'm talking about a guy who could not wait to get to work. I'm talking about a guy who took care of his family. I'm talking about a guy who took his family on vacations. You know, sometimes twice a year. You know, most of the time it was one time a year before the kids went to school, so they can you know, when the teacher said, where did you go this summer? You know, I made sure that my kids went, you know, because my mom tried to do that with us. And I went from that to, where is he at? I was like Waldo. You hear me? Like, people was looking for me. Because I wouldn't go around my family. I wasn't one of them addicts who went around the family. Like, I could not stand my mother's, I could not stand my mother looking at me the way she was looking at me. I couldn't stand my sisters and the people who raised me and taught me things that would make me have a great life. I couldn't go around them people, so I hid. You know, I was one of them addicts who, you know, who hid behind the pole and act like nobody didn't see you. I was like kind of that at it. You know what I mean? At the end of the road. And I remember just as clear as day when I couldn't take it no more. And I believe that, you know, it talks about in our literature, it talks about the same God that's with us now was the same God that was with us then. And I didn't know what that God was when I got here. And some guy, you know, I've read this. I always read this for people who got a problem with God, because it ain't the God who I thought it was. I thought it was the God that would strike you down, and he would do all these terrible things to you. And but the God that we have in Narcotics Anonymous ain't that God that I thought it was. Like, my mom's God is the same God, but she used to say what this God was going to do to me. And I would be scared to death. And because I would be in church saying, well, I don't know why they ain't struck down, because I just seen them coming out the bar. You know what I mean? And they was a deacon. You know what I mean? So I think my mom just wanted me to do good. I think she was just trying to scare me. And but it says, so welcome. It says we are glad that you have made it here and hope that you decide to stay. It is important for you to know that you will hear God mentioned in our meetings. What we are referring to is a power greater than ourselves that makes possible what seems impossible. Now that's a hell of a God that would make what seems impossible now makes possible. Now that's great for me. It wasn't the one who I thought was going to come out the sky and was going to say, "You're done." Didn't happen that way. So along the journey, see, there's a journey when you get here, right? And along the journey, a lot of things happen along the journey. Like, because you get clean doesn't mean everything's going to go away. Everything still keeps happening. And if you feel like bad, like my sponsor said, you're supposed to feel bad. Until you deal with that thing that makes you feel bad, until you deal with that thing is still there. It's like Pac-Man. You know Pac-Man? Pac-Man just keeps eating, right? But this is how it was for me when I got here. This is how it was for me. And how it was for me when I got here was this new book we have right here, this new book, Traditions book we have. Tradition 5 says, "So many of us were seeking freedom when we started using. We were looking for a way out of our feelings, our responsibilities, and our lives. The freedom we find in NA is different from that. The 12 steps brings us freedom from obsessive thoughts and compulsive actions. Our fellowship brings us freedom from isolation. We are free to become exactly who we are and to find a sense of fulfillment in our lives. Whatever that means for us, we are set free to love, to care, to hope, to hurt, to reach out, to grow, no matter where we are in our recovery. The ability to grow spiritually enables us to find freedom, even within the walls of a cell. Our greatest freedom is not outside ourselves, but inside ourselves. I was always searching, right? I was always, you know, they say we were searching for love in all the wrong places. And I remember as a young boy, I always wanted to get to this street in my hometown. It was called Idaho. And we used to say, "Who the hell?" You'll get that later. But they was doing it up there, man. And I lived like a block away, and I could see all the action. They got a song that goes something like, "Don't rush to get old." And that's what I did. I rushed to get old. And what happened was I got to Narcotics Anonymous as a man, but I was still a boy. And so I grew up in Narcotics Anonymous. I thank God for my predecessors. And look at that right there, man. Release from our chains. I'm no longer chained no more. You know, and I remember being chained like a dog. This disease had me, you know, I spoke in Indiana, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so, and I talked about being in crack's army. I went from a private to a general in one day. one day. The disease of addiction said, look, it was talking to me in my own voice. And it said something like this. Hey, how long you want to be out here? I said, I don't know. You know, because when I got to the end of the road, everything was, I don't know. My family was confused. They was baffled. You know what I mean? And every time they would say, what's wrong with you? I would say, I don't know. That was my favorite line at the end of the road. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. But what I come to discover was when I put the drug down, when I put the dope down, I'm talking about my first sponsor told me, he said, we ain't working no steps. He said, the first step I want you to work is learn how to stay stuck. Because you can stop when you go to jail. You know, that's easy. It's easy to get clean when you go to jail. Oh, when the money run out. Remember when the money ran out? It's like, damn, I ain't got no more money, man. And I guess I'll wait around for a while. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know, something will happen. Maybe I'll just hang out. You know what I mean? I'll just lamp like a lamp pole. You know what I mean? And maybe, you know, something will happen. You know, I got tired of that shit. I got tired of that, man. You talk about being tired of being sick and tired. And then I put the drug down. You know, after I got clean, I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in Butler, Pennsylvania. And I got a sponsor 6 months in. Because I was the addict who didn't think I was an addict for 6 months. I would be in meetings like this. Damn, I can't wait till this meeting over. You know, I thought I was too young. I got here at 36 years old, and I thought I was too young. I just turned 58 years old a couple weeks ago. I had already planned my funeral long before I got here. That's the kind of addict I was. You talk about, I was the addict I was telling them before, I was the kind of addict that, you know, I was walking 5 o'clock in the morning with no money, looking for the next one. Because I thought the dope was going to fix me. And the dope never fixed me. It never fixed me. But I didn't know that was happening. I didn't know that the dope wasn't fixing me. The dope never fixed me. You know, I'm talking about when we crossed the line. You remember when we crossed the line when the shit became a job? You remember when it became a job? When it wasn't fun no more. And they told me, you know, once you cross that line, you can't go back. Like, we don't end up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous just by coincidence. Like, I didn't say one day, I think it's a good thing for me to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Shit didn't happen like that for me. You know what I mean? I had to get beat, man. I'm talking about, I was the guy who was sleeping up under pine trees. I had 2 garbage bags full of clothes. They was both dirty. I thought one was cleaner than the other. I'm telling you. My mind was told. I'm telling you, when I got here, I was delusional when I got here. You know, I was talking about, you know, a president that had been gone for 2 terms. You know, that's how bad it was. I was stuck in a four block radius. By the time I got here. And so I'm glad when I heard that there was a program, because I played it off. Like, I tried to act like Narcotics Anonymous wasn't shit. Like, I knew they was something, because when I came in here, somebody hugged me at the door, and they told me it was going to be okay. Now, staying clean must come first, but trust me, there's some work to be done. You know, you just can't stay clean for the day. I mean, you can stay clean for the day, but there's some work that you got to put in. It's like going to the ATM machine, right? And you say, well, I'm going to get $40 out. Well, you can't get $40 out if you ain't got $40 in that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? I told my sponsor, I said, man, I want 10 years clean. Here you go. He said, Well, it takes 10 years to get 10 years. You know what I'm saying? So there's some work to be done. And so so the journey starts, man. The journey to continue this. A lot of people don't make it, man, here. Trust me. A lot of, just think of the many people that never made it to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, so many people are chosen, but very few people choose this shit, man. There's some hard work to be done up in here, man. Because we start watching our friends and shit on the sideline. You know, we be thinking, I remember when I first got here and shit, I went home and shit, and I seen my friends still getting high. I was like, damn. See, the disease is real conniving. You know what I mean? We got the kind of disease that will tell you it's okay, and then when you do it, it'll convict you, say, you stupid. Stupid. Now look at you. Now you back out there again. You know what I'm saying? No money. Looking stupid. You know what I mean? But we got all these rewards we don't look at. But see, it takes work. It takes work to stay here. It really do. But it's a good work, though. I love this shit. I tell my friends all the time when I go home, they say, you still clean? I say, you know I'm still clean because I ain't in your pockets. You know what I mean? And so, like, I say, yeah, I say, I'm still clean. They say, you can't smoke this one joint? I look at them, I say, yeah, I can smoke 1,000 joints. But I don't want to smoke no joints. See, because they don't understand the disease of addiction. There's people that don't understand the disease of addiction. So I don't go back and forth with somebody who don't understand this disease. You know, I don't wear NA charms for people that don't. I wear NA shit for us. Now, if you ask me what the shit is, I'm gonna tell you. You know what I mean? Like I don't wear that shit for people who don't know what this shit is about. But what I realized, why wouldn't I want to be in a program that's saving lives? Why wouldn't I want to be in a program that's saving lives? I understand I cannot shoot dope successfully. I can't. I tried it. Shit didn't work. I can't smoke crack successfully. I tried it. It didn't work. I can't drink successfully neither, because when they say last call for alcohol, I'm like, no. Why are you closing the bar? Because that's where the dope people are. When I drink, I smoke. You know what I'm saying? It went hand in hand. You know what I mean? So if you want to know about your disease, it's in the book. You know what I mean? So if you want to find out about your disease, man, you know, like them books right there, man. Like if you can't afford a book, like them pamphlets, them high peak pamphlets, them shits will save your life. They saved my life. You know, you don't get this shit with clean time. Clean time don't make you not want to get high no more. No, shit don't happen. If 22 years kept me clean, do you really think I would be here, out here? Seriously. When they called me, I would be like, hell no, I ain't coming out. I ain't. Fuck that. You know what I mean? But I know that this is the part. See, this ain't no place to be. Like, I used to think this was a coup, but this is where people live and die, right here, right here. This is where people live and die. I always try to tell the newcomer, look, if you can stay here, there's going to be some people, man, that's going to follow you. And look, and we ain't going to be here forever, so we need people, we need younger people to stay. We really do. See, when I got here, it was a whole bunch of nodders and shit, like when I got here. It was like some real, like I was up in age, but there was some really up in age people here when I got here. Like some 90-year-old motherfuckers. And they was nodding, they was just nodding because they was old. You know what I'm saying? But they were safe though. See, I didn't realize that they had gone through this stuff right here. They had already gone through this. You know what I mean? And I thank God for those people, because a lot of those people ain't here no more. And they taught me so much. So the only thing that I can do, man, is just carry this message. You know what I mean? And so if you're young, man, if somebody telling you, man, like, if they telling you stuff like, man, you too young to be here, that's some bullshit. All you gotta do is go to the graveyard and see how many young people is sitting in there. I just went to 8 funerals within the last 2 months. So you tell me that too young is too young to be here, or you tell me it's too old to be here. I knew a guy from New York, his name was Kylie's, and Kylie's found this program when he was 55. And somebody asked him, they said, well, ain't you mad you found this shit at 55? He said, ain't you mad? He said, was you mad when your check got here late? Nah. When your check come late, you happy in a month. Because you got one, right? So he was 55 and he said, no, I ain't mad. I got this at 55 because if I didn't get it at 55, I'm still shooting dope. He said, when I got here, I couldn't even find a vein when I got here. He said, I was shooting in places where you don't shoot. And y'all know what I'm talking about. Right? That's what happens. That's what happens to addicts that can't stop. And some of us can't stop. Some of us will not stop. The literature says that we can pray over them. Right? We can beat them. We can put them in jail. But until the addict is ready, look, I know people who died that had the best sponsors. You can have the best sponsor in NA and still die. Ain't that some shit? That's some shit right there. Because it ain't based on your sponsor. Staying clean ain't based on your sponsor. The sponsor is just to guide you through the steps and inspire you. You know, you want to be inspired with this shit. You don't want to act like this shit is some, oh, I don't want to be here kind of shit. Because that's what the disease wants. The disease only needs a crack. And once it gets a crack, once it get in, it starts saying all kind of dumb stuff. Like, he white, he black, she gay. You know, it starts doing stuff like that. That's what this disease we got. This disease, you know what I mean? This disease is funky. It really is. But if you want to stay here and help somebody, I stay here because I help people. That's my thing. I've been in service almost since I've been here. I've been in service. I was on the programming committee for 12 years in a row for Start to Live. I was the program chair, all that stuff, man. But some of that helps keep you clean. I got an H&I commitment at the VA hospital, the place that saved my life. I take people in there now with 6 months clean. All you got to do is have 6 months clean, and you know what I mean? And I like to get those people, you know, within 6 months and a year. I like to put them in there. You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? And they be real scared. I said, look, it's okay being scared, being nervous. You know, nervous is a good thing, especially. You know, I learned in my oral communications class and my public speaking class, they said being nervous is a good thing because you care about what you're going to do. And I never knew that. I thought nervous was like, you a punk. You know what I'm saying? But that's not being a punk. That's having humility. Because without humility, you ain't doing this without humility. And so, I watched a lot of people die, man, from this disease. And my mom got to see me clean for 15 years before she died. My mom died from ovarian cancer. My mom's life was a love story. Was a love story. She died at 84 years old. And she got to come to one of these meetings, you know what I mean? And she got to see how we interact, and she just loved it. And so she always told me to tell y'all when I get the opportunity to tell y'all, thank you. So thank you. And if you knew, you know what I mean, don't stay new. Just stay. Seriously, man. You know, do whatever you got to do, man. They told me when I got here, man, they said, look, they said, chase this shit like you chase the drug. You know how I chase the drug? I would do anything I had to do to get the drug. And I wasn't that guy. I was the guy who drove down the street in a brand new car from the military, and I looked across the street and I seen some people over there, and they looked like they was messed up, and I said, I'll never be like that. Guess where I was? Hanging with them. So this disease is funky, man. But if you got this disease, I believe that everybody that's affected with this disease, I believe is God's way of telling us that He loves us. That's what I believe now. I don't believe that being an addict is a stigma no more. I don't believe that no more. You know? And so, if you old, you new, and you just coming back, you know what I mean? Grateful that you're here, you know what I mean? I love all of y'all in this room because it's y'all to keep me clean. It's y'all to keep me clean. I go all over the place to meet. People be like saying, how did you get here? How did you find us? You know what I mean? And so I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be to stand in front of y'all today and tell y'all that going to meetings still makes sense. Right? And that this thing really truly works. And I always say that I'd rather be in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting thinking about getting high than to be getting high thinking about being in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. My name is Dale, and I'm an addict.